center and coming in is Lou Billendijk. Center net.
Flame bench, there's all kinds of excitement going on there.
Scores! Roll the highlight reel. 6-0 Flames.
You can't put it in the wind column.
Yeah, baby, yeah, baby, yeah, baby.
This is Flames Talk with Pat Steinberg and Aaron Vickers on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
All right, let's get a Monday hour underway. It's Monday, April 29th. It's almost May. Welcome to this hour of Flames Talk with Aaron Vickers of NHL.com. My name is Pat Steinberg. We welcome you to the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock & Safe. Simplify your life with a security ecosystem. Go to CalgaryLockAndSafe.com to request a security audit and get a tailored solution. It's almost that time where we lose Vickers to Europe and the World Championship. You leave Saturday?
Saturday.
Where are you flying through?
I am going Calgary to Dublin, and I've got about a 7-hour layover.
Did end up booking that?
I did. On your advice.
Okay.
On your Guinness advice. So I am going to go in.
Okay.
Have a beverage or two, then get back to the airport, and then Dublin to Budapest, because Canada plays a pre-tournament game in Budapest.
Okay. World Championship in May, and Aaron Vickers of NHL.com will be our Flames Talk correspondent. We're hoping for more than just the one member of the Flames to be there. Certainly, Martin Pospisil going to represent Slovakia is awesome, but hoping that maybe we get some news on some other Flames going to the World Championship as time goes on. Just remember, there is no airport transportation from Dublin International into central Dublin. It's awful.
That would have been information that you should have told me before I booked.
I mean, there's transportation, just no like train. Okay. You can take an Uber or a cab.
What is it, about 20 minutes?
Yeah, about 20, 25 minutes, something into central Dublin.
My faith in you has been restored.
You can go into the Temple Bar. Temple Bar is the area right in central London. Big tourist hotspot. Just get away from there, just a little outside the Temple Bar. I'll give you a couple bar recommendations. Make sure you
mini
get
pub crawl?
No, just like one or two, but just make sure you get a Guinness in Ireland. It's a different experience. I digress. We'll talk about that another time. I think it's probably important to talk a little Dustin Wolf after his last two starts. That would be because this young man returns to the American Hockey League. And how about making 46-on-46 Wednesday night to give the Calgary Wranglers a 1-0 series lead on the Tucson Roadrunners? Two nights later, makes 40-on-43 as the Wranglers beat Tucson in the best of three, 2-0 with a 4-3 game 2 victory. And yeah, just the 86-on-89 in two playoff games for Wolf. That's a .966 playoff save percentage for the young man, and a chance to go deeper as the Wranglers now get set to take on the powerhouse Coachella Valley Firebirds on Friday in a best of five. First two games here, games 3 and 4 and 5, if necessary, will be in Palm Springs. And if they're going to pull off the upset against the Western Conference's best team in the American League, the team that knocked the Wranglers out last year, if they're going to pull off what would be a sizable AHL upset, it is going to be almost chiefly on the back of Dustin Wolf, because he is going to need to be at the level that he was at in the first two games against Tucson in this series against Coachella Valley. Now, the Wranglers getting guys back like Klapka and Solovyov and Coronado, having Pelche there, all huge. But Dustin Wolf and his .966 save percentage, the number one reason why the Wranglers are moving on.
I mean, a literal game changer. And we're not surprised he's back with the Wranglers. I mean, that was always going to be the plan, and get him another run at the Calder Cup playoffs, but he is a legit and total game changer for the Wranglers. He's the best goalie in the American Hockey League, 2 years running. Didn't spend as much time there this season, so he's not going to probably be able to lock up that three-peat. But what he can do is, as we saw in round one, he can absolutely steal a series for the Wranglers. He did that, and as you alluded to, he's going to need to do it again against Coachella Valley, who's a pretty good hockey team, Pat. I don't know if you follow much of the AHL, but they are one of the elites. So when you do return a guy like Dustin Wolf, though, who is a two-time AHL Goalie of the Year, the reigning MVP, and a guy whose confidence has never been higher coming off of not a full season in the NHL, but getting a good run of NHL action at the tail end of the season, now he can translate that momentum, come back down a level, and while he comes down a level from the NHL to the AHL, he's able to elevate his AHL play based on his experience. And he's proven that, as you mentioned, a 966 save percentage through his first two playoff games.
And I know the Flames thought it was really important to get him in to that game, game 72 against Abbotsford. Just get him
adjustment
one.
Game.
Exactly. A reacclimation game to the American League
dress
level.
Dress rehearsal.
Right? I mean, and Jordan Sigalette talked about it, and Dustin Wolf talked about it, about, you know, you go from the NHL where everything is polished, everything happens that much quicker, everything's so structured that as a goaltender, your habits and the way that you're reading games very different compared to a more scrambly game that is the American League. So that one game, I think that they all look at and say, that was really important. And, you know, I really think that there's a mindset thing going on with Dustin as well, because I think it's important to point out that this is the AHL swan song for Dustin
yes.
Wolf. And I think internally, the organization is looking at it like that. Internally, they're saying this is his last run in the American League before we make room for him in the NHL full-time next year. And I think Wolf is very aware of the situation. And I think Dustin is very determined to finish his American League time with as deep a run in the Calder Cup playoffs as he possibly can. He's won his goaltenders of the year. He's won his MVP, but he has not won an American League championship. I don't know if this is the year or not, but just talking to a few different people, his mindset is full on. Like, this is the team where I've really, I've ascended to my highest heights yet. And he wants to finish his time with this Wranglers team on as high a note as possible. And this guy is dialed to try to win a Calder Cup. So, you know, I just think that's important, because I think it's important for development for him to be playing these high leverage games, important for workload, for reps, all of it's important. And I think it is imperative that he's on the NHL roster full time next year. And I think that the mindset of him closing out his American League time on a high is important. And I think that I think it's going to be a really important stretch for him as he goes into the offseason.
There's no doubt in my mind he's playing his last AHL games before being promoted to a full-time NHLer next season. And we both run through the list. There's nothing, literally nothing left for him to accomplish at the AHL level outside of a Calder Cup title. So if you're channeling all your energy into that and almost, in a sense, giving back to the Calgary Flames farm team where you spent a few seasons now, where you learned how to be a pro, where you built your game up to the point where that league is going to be in your rear view. It's almost a little swan song sense where he's going to do everything he can to prolong it as long as possible, because he wants to give back a championship, because that's the only thing he hasn't given the franchise at that level.
It's Steinberg, Vickers, as we continue along this hour on Flames Talk. Wranglers win their first round series, 2-0. Best of 5 is the next series against Coachella Valley, starting Friday at the Scotiabank Saddledome, Friday night, Sunday afternoon. Tickets available on Ticketmaster, Wranglers website, and more. Get out there, support the Wranglers for game 1 of this best of 5 on Friday night. It's time to go inside hockey for Calgary Co-op. It's that time to stock up for the celebrations that matter with ingredients that help make memories. Visit Calgary Co-op, where life's in store. Time to check in with the voice of the Wranglers, Sandra Persina, who joins us now as well. And SP, you were there for both games in Tucson. You called them both live right here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. You saw 86 on 89 for Dustin Wolf. You tell us, how good was Dustin Wolf in these two games in Tucson?
First star the first game, and deservedly so. He put the team on his back, and he gave them the support that they needed to find their legs. And it took a little bit of time, but I think for the team, he gives them the confidence that they need, knowing he's going to make the saves in key moments, whether it be there was a penalty parade, game number 1, 5 minors for Calgary, so had to kill 5 penalties, went perfect, and they always say your best penalty killer is your goalie. He was exactly that, stopped a couple of breakaways, odd man rushes, he was brilliant. And the way that game started, Calgary probably the better in the first half of the first period, but Matt Villalta very good on the other end of the ice, and I was saying with Cassandra, will Dustin Wolf be able to equal that? Well, he did, and then some, in addition to what he was able to do in game number one. And then that's permeated into game number two, and he got some run support, which I think gave him a little bit of a breath.
Well, it's been such a weird year for him because he's been up and down and up and down, and he got that one game in game 72 in Abbotsford, and then... Now, I only got to see game one. I did not get to see game two mm-hmm. on the Friday night, but it just felt like that was the Dustin Wolf that we saw at the American League level yep. for all of last year. Like that he looked like the elite guy that we've come to know at that level, hey?
Yeah, it seems like he knows, and I think everybody knows, that this is it for him in the AHL. Yeah. So he's embracing these important games because that can translate to the NHL level. And a best of three, you can't make mistakes.
Yeah.
You make mistakes and you're on the brink of elimination the next night. And probably going into this, so it's a 2 seed versus a 7 seed. And it's a very top heavy Tucson roster. Dylan Gunther, really good player. Josh Doan, both of them coming off of nice stints in the NHL. Mm-hmm. They bring in Connor Geeky, who has a great pedigree beyond a point per game in that last season in the WHL. So you go into it thinking, okay, do we have a chance? And then you see how well Dustin is playing, and then you're like, oh yeah, we really do have a chance. He was absolutely brilliant in that first game.
So did the, because in both games, Tucson had a pretty big shot edge. Was
mm-hmm.
was that indicative of the way the games were played, or were they a little closer than the shots would have suggested? Like, was that a situation where it was highway robbery for Wolf, or how competitive were the Wranglers in those two games in your eyes?
So there was definitely a lot of rubber on goal, but I'm not going to say they were quality chances.
Okay.
It's the way that I saw it was his blue liners and his center were allowing him to see all the pucks. He had vision the entire time. They were clearing the lanes for him. So he was really active, and you could, that rink, unfortunately, just the way that the sound travels, I could even hear them communicating out on the ice where I was situated, way in the back in the corner. So they were just letting him see the puck. But for game number one, absolutely, he was the hero. And I think that allowed them to have the confidence to be a little bit freer in that second game, because in the first game, they weren't necessarily holding their sticks super tight. But for this group, I think they went into the game not knowing what to expect. But once they saw him totally settled in and just brilliant, they were ready to go for game number two.
What did you make of, because they went 11-7, 11 forwards and 7D in both games. What did you make of that decision when you found out that's the way head coach Trent Cull was going to go for game one?
Not shocked, because it happened a bunch of times in the regular season where you have so many healthy blue liners, and for a long time, Calgary didn't have a lot of healthy blue liners.
No, now they've got like 15 of them that they could go with if they really wanted.
Yep, so you had players up from the ECHL, guys on ATOs, and then the up and down with the Flames, but this made a lot of sense, and I think it worked really well. Everybody cycled through quite a bit, but you see a bit of that veteran presence with somebody like a Mark Pesek. He's been around the NHL and the pro game for mm-hmm. such a long time. And then how can you take somebody else out? Jonathan Aspro was a brilliant signing for the Wranglers this season. Came in as a PTO during Flames camp and impressed enough that he was able to get a contract. How can you take him out? You're not going to take out Ilya Solovyov. Jeremy Poirier, he's starting to find his form a little bit more. You can't take him away from Colton Pullman. They've created a really nice 1-2 punch. So who do you really take out? You can't take out anybody. And you have enough guys, I think, forwards, like Adam Klapko was getting double shifted at times. He was on the fourth line. He was on the second line. It just made sense for Trent Cull to go in that direction.
Okay, so let's, we talked about Wolf, but let's talk about a few of those guys who rejoined the Wranglers after the Flames season came to an end, because when you and I were getting ready for this, you kind of pointed to those guys and said they made a big difference. So where do you want to start? You want to start with Solovyov, because he played a few games at the end of the season with the Flames, comes back to the Wranglers and was a real difference maker in this series, wasn't he?
Particularly in game number two, he scored. Great goal, comes in as a trailer, great wrist shot, beats Matt Villalta, and that gives Calgary the lead. And for me, though, it was actually what he did in his own end. Mm-hmm. And it showed why he should be an NHL blue liner. Calgary, one goal lead late in the third period, and Tucson goes on the power play. So you look at the personnel, Josh Doan, Dylan Gunther. I mean, they've got a good team. That's a great roster. And Solovyov on the ice for the full 2 minutes. He's blocking shots. He's clearing the. He was just brilliant. And I'm so sad that the AHL doesn't track these things. Maybe somebody does, a blogger or something somewhere, to track how good he was in his own zone. Flames fans should be so excited about that guy. It was a fantastic performance, one that didn't get recognized in the third star and or in the three stars, excuse me, and you don't really see it in the score sheet, but the visual test, he was brilliant.
So he comes back and makes a big difference in game two. Klapka had a couple points in game two. Coronado scored. Pelche had a couple of points. Those were some. Obviously, Wolf and what he did between the pipes, but how much did those guys rejoining the team and being there in the playoffs help the Wranglers get over this hump?
Well, for Adam Klapka, huge. I can only imagine what scoring that goal meant to him and did for him, just hearing from Mackenzie Weegar and how he described the celebration after the goal and what Adam Klapka said to him, which we can't play, but you can imagine. And he was distributing the puck the best I've seen him since he came to North America for the pro game. Three assists, three crucial assists, two of them behind the back passes. He gets one to Cole Schwint in the first game for what turned out to be the game winner, and then on the power play to Sam Morton after he grabs it. I think it was Stromgren, Klapka, and then he goes behind the back to Sam Morton in the far faceoff circle, and he's able to beat Villalta. It was fantastic. So to see him start to get a more well-rounded game, I don't think he's the perfect player. He does need to, and we say it, he needs to use his size a little bit better. He is 6'8", so he needs to win board battles a little bit more. But when he's got the puck, things do happen.
We're chatting with Sandra Priscina, voice of the Wranglers, as the Wranglers are off to round two of the AHL playoffs. They'll start a best of five against Coachella Valley on Friday of this week at home. One other name that you really wanted to talk about, scored the game winner in game two on Friday night, and that's William Stromgren, who's really started to come into his own in North America, hasn't he? Really started to feel more comfortable. Even you take a look, like, we can see it with the numbers, and the numbers have just gotten gradually better, and certainly in the calendar year of 2024, you're like, okay, the numbers are starting to pop, but you see him all the time. You call his games. What are we seeing in Stromgren that led to him being such an impact maker in this series?
Yeah, I think the development since about December, I'd say he just has more confidence with the puck, more confidence situational. He's more confident in his own zone, which, of course, if you pick up the puck in your own zone, I mean, puck possession is everything, and he's able to bring it up the ice. And I think Trent Call noticed that this kid's got some confidence. So put him in situations that he can succeed. So he starts getting more power play time, maybe on the second unit, and then he gets elevated to the top unit. He starts showing a little bit more chemistry with his line mates. Mm-hmm. And the reaction on that goal was completely genuine. As you can hear, my voice went into an octave that I didn't even know existed as somebody who worked in radio. But the goal was that good, where he picks up the puck at the center of the ice. He's by himself. And we're like, well, maybe he's going to go wide and do a button hook and wait for a trailer. He's like, no, I'm going to split the D. And he roofs it and he pops the bottle. And that turns out to be the series clinching goal.
Yeah.
And so now he's shown that he can score in big moments. And I think that's crucial for his development. And there's always a lot of chatter that, and I see it online, okay, well, we could have had Logan Stankoven, who's able to make an immediate impact in the professional game. But I think we know, being in the industry that we are in, you sometimes have to show a little bit of patience for certain prospects. And when you see second rounder, you expect things more so than somebody taken late in the draft. But you do have to show patience. And I think it's starting to pay off with this young man.
Well, for him, I mean, just like from a size and strength standpoint, he just, unlike other guys, he needed some time to just like put on man strength. Because I know that Trent Culls pointed to this a couple of times this year, but that's one of the things that's taken a big step, is that he's been able to just physically be at a closer level to other guys playing in the American League, which, you know, that can make a big difference as opposed to playing in different levels. Now you're playing against these are conditioned men, pro hockey players. Like, that can take a little while to get your physical side of things to that level.
And I want to bring in off-ice factors, too, because you're coming from Scandinavia, where travel is a little bit different. The cities and the markets are closer together, so you come here to North America. Yeah. You're constantly on a bus, on a plane, on a train, whatever it is to get to your next destination. You're traveling commercial. You're not traveling through charter. So you really need to understand the rigors of being a professional player yeah. in the American Hockey League, and he's starting to figure that out, and I think he's embracing it. And then knowing... You're seeing some of your teammates graduate. So knowing that the opportunity is there if you want to take it. And maybe next year he's on that call-up list.
Yep. Okay, so off to Coachella Valley now. Actually, they'll stay here. They'll finally get a couple of home games this postseason. No home games in round one. They will play game one and two of this best of five against Coachella Valley at the Dome Friday night, and then Sunday afternoon. We'll have both games for you on Sportsnet 960, The Fan. Now, and we were talking about this off the air, but last year and the year before when Mitch Love was the head coach, Wranglers were the top seed, and they decided to choose the first two games yeah. at home as the top seed. Well, this time Coachella Valley is the top seed. They've chosen to take the last three games at home, which is usually the way teams go, right? It was a little bit off the beaten path for Mitch Love to go the first two games. So not a surprise the Wranglers get the first two games at home.
Yeah, for Coachella, awesome building. Acrisure, the fans there, they love their team, and they're really starting to embrace themselves as being a hockey market. They've yeah. got Grant Fuhr in their corner. He's there. He's one of their broadcasters. Yeah. He does the color commentary. And I had a chance to actually chat with him when we were in Coachella last season for the playoffs, and he says the market, it's ripe for hockey. They absolutely love it there. So that building is going to be loud. Of all the AHL buildings I've been in thus far, it is the loudest. Passionate fans. And I think they want to feed off of that energy. They have, if I'm not mistaken, the second best home record. I believe Hershey probably had the top one. They just had a ridiculous historic season. But for Coachella, they want to feed off of that energy. And it only makes sense. Plus, they've been very good at the Saddle Dome. They have the best away record in the Western Conference, and they've been very good here at the Saddle Dome. A lot of Calgary connections with their players,
yep.
whether it be Chris Drieger or Riker Evans, Cole Lynn's got family that comes from Saskatchewan and to here, and they always seem to up their game just a little bit at the Dome, and I expect much of the same.
Well, I mean, and you also got a triple overtime game
yes.
in that building, so you're very familiar with where Coachella Valley plays. So how in tough are the Wranglers? And look, they're a better team now mm-hmm. after having won this series and getting the players back they have, and there's a lot of confidence that comes from coming off this first round win, but how difficult a test are they in for going up against Coachella Valley here?
This will be a very difficult test. It's a steep battle. Coachella Valley of 72 games in an AHL season, only two teams finished with plus 100 points this year, and that's Hershey, who went on a tear and put up ridiculous numbers in Coachella Valley. Mm-hmm. They are a fantastic team, top to bottom. Blue liners are great. Great goaltending, fantastic coaching, Dan Bylsma. And in their season series, they met eight times, Coachella with six wins. So, and they've got some ringers back. Shane Wright gets called up to Seattle, has a pretty good little NHL stint. Maybe he's finding his game a little bit more. Riker Evans rejoining the team. So it'll be tough, but guess what? We thought this was going to be tough too, yeah. a 2-7. And that's certainly, there's 20 points difference there in the standings. This one's going to be 30. So it is a significant difference when you look at the records and the points accumulated. But I don't think that any test is too big for this group if it relies on the strength of having the depth. Because you look at this Tucson series, six different goal scorers, right?
Yep.
So rely on that. You have the depth down the middle. The center's doing a real good job. Cole Schwint, I thought he was fan. Again, one of those things that's not tracked by the AHL, and it's too bad, but he was very, my eye test at least, showed that he was very good in the dot, particularly in his own zone. So rely on the depth down the middle and lean on some of those veterans.
Yeah.
Clark Bishop's won a Calder Cup before. Brett Sutter has nearly 1,100 games now in the AHL. Mark Pesek, just rely on them a little bit more if you don't want to be caught off guard, but lean on them.
Well, and then the great equalizer, bringing it full circle, is the way Dustin Wolf is playing. You've probably got a chance against anybody that you go up against if he can continue playing the way he did in the first two games against Tucson.
Yep. Listen, I think you aim for, of course you want to pick up two wins, but realistically at home, get a split.
Yep.
And then go on the road. That's what happened last year. And Calgary, unfortunately, two of those games do go to overtime. And the triple and then the single overtime in the fifth game that ended the season for Calgary. But they were toe-to-toe for a long time. I remember when we went there, the last game was a barn burner. But the fourth game, I believe it was a 1-0. It was a one-goal victory. I think Dryden Hunt had the only goal. But it was the series went in two different directions where it was really tightly contested, tight checking game in game four, and then it was wide open in game number five. 6-5, I think, was the final in that game. It was crazy. And then the triple OT heartbreaker for Calgary. So it's not like that much was separating them in terms of playoff hockey. So you got to get to that gear again.
Yep. Enjoy yourself. And we'll hear you on Friday night for game one against Coachella Valley. Looking forward to it. Hey, thanks for doing this.
Yeah, my pleasure. And hopefully we get lots of bums in the seats and let's embrace it. Yeah,
playoff hockey. Yeah. There's still playoff hockey in Calgary.
Let's do
right?
it.
Yeah.
Come on, Herd.
Thanks, SP.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Sandra Priscina is the voice of the Wranglers. She's on the call Friday night for game one. Wranglers, Coachella Valley Firebirds will be on the air at 6 o'clock with a little pregame, and the puck drops at 7 with Sandra. Wranglers win their round one best of three. They're off to a round two best of five against the number one team in the West, Coachella Valley. That's the team that knocked the Wranglers out of the Calder Cup playoffs last year. So should be a very interesting series in round two, and Dustin Wolf is going to be a huge part of it if the Wranglers are to make this thing interesting. And we'll see with Trent Cull. We'll hear from him on Tuesday's edition of Flames Talk, the head coach of the Wranglers, see what the Wranglers have in store for Coachella Valley in this second round series. Sandra Priscina on Twitter at S Priscina joined us inside hockey for Calgary Co-op. Flames fans, meet Cal and Gary. Top products curated for Calgarians, and we mean every single one of you. Only available at Calgary Co-op. Visit them today.
Anything and everything Calgary Flames. It's all on Flames Talk. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Round one of the 2024 Stanley Cup playoffs well underway. And we've got a pair of Pacific Division Flames rivals on the verge of advancing to round two and a second round date with one another. Those, of course, being the Vancouver Canucks and Edmonton Oilers, who both have 3-1 series leads on the Nashville Predators and LA Kings, respectively. Both took their 3-1 series leads on Sunday. Where do you want to start? Oilers or Canucks?
Let's go Canucks.
So that comeback win was one of the more improbable playoff comebacks I have seen in years. That reminded me of like a find a way Flames 2014-15 November game. Like it,
same stakes too.
Those things, right? That's why.
Yeah, I know. I'm just in jest.
Those things shouldn't happen in the playoffs. There is no way that should have happened. That Nashville was so much better than Vancouver from start to almost finish. After Brock Besser made it 1-0, Nashville took that game over. Vancouver couldn't put a passing sequence together, let alone get a quality scoring opportunity or a shot attempt from anywhere from less than 200 feet away. That was one of the more improbable comeback playoff wins I have seen in years.
So is that the Vancouver Canucks rallying and you got to give them full marks in your mind, or is that the Nashville Predators absolutely collapsing away a game and potentially the series? Because there's a massive difference between 2-2 and being down 3-1.
Well, the answer to that question is it doesn't matter. And what I mean by that is just win. Like, I've learned this from having the privilege of covering Flames playoff games. It's just the most fun, and we critique games and we critique wins when they're not great during the regular season. But when you get into March and you're in a playoff race, and you're fighting for your playoff lives, you kind of just get into the, yeah, don't critique the wins. At that point, it's like the result's the only thing that matters. And then once, doesn't matter if you're a one seed or an eight seed, once you're into the playoffs, the results don't, the process doesn't really matter anymore. It's like if you can win four games by the only reason you're winning them is because of goaltending and blocking shots, if that's the way to win a series, then you win a series like that and you won 4 of 7 and you're on to the next round. And so I don't really critique wins in the playoffs. And so putting myself in that mindset for Vancouver, did they deserve to win that game? No, by all accounts, like by no means did they. And yet they won it. And that's all that matters once you're in the postseason. They got really nice goaltending from Shelovs. And that was a very cool story. Brock Besser scoring all three goals, including the two to tie it. And then Elias Lindholm scoring the overtime winner. As improbable as it was, I actually, yes, it was a absolutely detrimental collapse from the Predators. And if I'm a Preds fan, I'm lamenting that for the next 6-7 months after they lose this series. But objectively, I come away from that tip in my hat to Vancouver that they found a way to win a game that they had no business winning. Because if you want to go on a deep run in the Stanley Cup playoffs in 2024, you need to win multiple games that you have no business winning. That's just what goes along with winning 8, 10, 12, maybe 16 games.
Now, surely that's got to be a backbreaker for the Nashville Predators to be up 2 with 2:49 remaining. You give up 2 to Besser, as you mentioned. Lindholm scores 1:02 into overtime for the win. Now you're down 3-1. Not impossible, but improbable. But losing in that fashion, giving up 3 goals in under 4 minutes at the tail end of the third period and to start overtime, I can't imagine a more deflating way to lose. And we hear players talk about it all the time, whether it's the regular season or the playoffs. It's either a win or a loss. You park it, you move on. But that's a massive swing in the series, going 2-2 to 3-1. And in that fashion, that's going to be tough for the Nashville Predators to come back from.
I mean, that is an absolute kick to the gut for them to lose the way they lost and to be so much better. I mean, honestly, I come away from both games in Nashville saying that, yeah, you know, Vancouver's pretty fortunate to win one, let alone two. But again, that's maybe a scary thing if you're the Oilers or Kings, because I'm a big believer in what Vancouver can be as a team, and they have yet to come anywhere. The only game that they've played that you're like, yeah, they played pretty well was game one.
Well, their Vezina-caliber goaltender
Has played three periods,
and that's it. Your best forward, or arguably your best forward, has 2 assists and a team worst -3. So for all intents and purposes, he hasn't necessarily shown up.
We're talking about Elias Pettersson. He's got to be hurt, right?
There's got to be something there. Makes no sense. He had 34 goals and knocked close to 90 points in over the course of the regular season. So to come out in the playoffs and like the way he impacts the game is with his speed and with his shot. And I don't see a lot of impactful play coming from him right now.
And I guess you could, if you really, because the narrative that I've seen on Canucks Twitter has been, you know, lights too bright, playoff spotlights too much for him, not the right person. I just don't know.
I don't buy that at all.
I'm not ready to believe that with a guy that good. He's a different player than JT Miller or a different player than Elias Lindholm or Quinn Hughes. I get all that, but I got to believe something's wrong with Elias Pettersson, and he's not playing at 100%.
I don't think it's a lights too bright thing, and the SHL is not the NHL, but as, I believe, a rookie in the Swedish Hockey League, led the playoffs in goals, most assists and points by a junior player in the playoffs, most valuable player, playoff MVP. Again, the SHL isn't the NHL, but when he was 18, maybe 19 years old, this is what he was doing in that kind of competition.
And I know the bubble is not the Stanley Cup playoffs in 2024, but remember in the 2020 bubble, he was 18 points in 17 games as the Canucks went to game 7 around 2 against Vegas. So he's done it before. Now, again, the pressure and the overall feel of playing in an empty Rogers Place in Edmonton compared to playing at Bridgestone Arena and Rogers Arena is a little bit different. I get that. I grant you that. But he has performed in the NHL playoffs before, just the Twilight Zone alternate universe NHL playoffs that we all experienced.
Which counts and doesn't count at the same time.
Yeah, agreed. It's like, it was like, it was high-level hockey and important hockey, but it was also an alternate reality that we'd all like to forget. Okay, here's, let me throw this back at you then, because I'm with you. I don't have a ton of confidence that Nashville's coming back. Which team do you have less confidence in coming back after a gut punch game four loss? The Nashville Predators or the LA Kings? Because I, and this is going to sound weird, but if I'm the LA Kings, I'm completely demoralized because I just threw my best shot at the Edmonton Oilers and we got shut down by Stuart Skinner. And then that's not me taking a shot at Stuart Skinner, but I'm trying to put myself in LA's shoes. It's like, we shut down McDavid, and McDavid and Draisaitl were very, for their caliber, very negligible at even strength in 5-on-5. We limited them to one power play goal and couldn't beat Stuart Skinner. Like, if I'm the LA Kings, I am straight up demoralized. Like, how do we beat these guys? We've lost 2 years straight to them. We just put our best game of the playoffs on the ice in game four on home ice and scored nothing. I actually have more confidence that Nashville can make this a series than I do for LA. And it feels like that 1-0 loss on home ice more demoralizing than even, and it sounds silly, but even though, because I just feel like if you're the Kings, you know that that's your best shot against the Edmonton Oilers. Because Edmonton, for the most part, in the first three games, in going up 2-1, I mean, really, it hadn't been close. Even in the overtime win,
right,
that, like, the Oilers were so much better in the first 9-plus periods, and then LA put this really good game on the ice and still got beat 1-0.
Yeah, I'm of the exact sort of same thought where the Nashville Predators have been the better team in multiple games in their series against Vancouver and haven't won or found ways to lose, whatever it is. And Saros has not played near to his potential, to what we're used to seeing him play. So I don't really necessarily have to squint hard to see a path for the Nashville Predators to get this to a game six or even a game seven where anything can happen. But I don't have a lot of faith in the Los Angeles Kings coming away with another win in this series at all.
At all.
It's over. Not literally, but for me, it's a heck of a path for the Kings to find a way to push this beyond the five games.
And I just don't think the Kings of all, there were two playoff teams coming into this postseason that I was like, yeah, they don't even, like, I was like, this sounds bad, but I came in to this year's Stanley Cup playoffs thinking there were two teams that just did not belong. And you're like, okay, yeah, you're one of the top 16, but you don't belong there. Let's see if you wrote them down. Yeah, Kings and Caps. The Capitals with their minus 200 goal differential. You did not belong in the playoffs.
No.
As much as you advanced to the playoffs, you did not. You're not in the same league as the Rangers and the Hurricanes and the Panthers. And, like, you're just not in the same. You can't even be put in the same conversation without laughing. And funny enough, the Caps got completely blown out of that series by the New York Rangers. That was a cakewalk for New York. And now you've got the Kings. Not only did I think the Kings didn't stand a chance against Dallas or Edmonton or Vancouver, whoever they might have played.
It could have been Vegas, and I say that just knowing that they're a wild card team. The Kings just didn't. There wasn't a matchup in the Western Conference.
There's seven. There are seven teams in the West that I'm like, damn, they could go deep. And then there's the LA Kings.
Yeah, that's actually, you know what? That's the best way to put it in my books.
And the Kings played really well on Sunday night and still lost 1-0. That's why I'm like, geez, they know what they're up against. They know that they've been ousted in two straight series already against the Oilers. And here they are. They just put it all on the line. Now they got to go back to Edmonton. I don't know. For whatever reason, I feel like Nashville might have a little bit more confidence in, because Nashville's been closer to Vancouver the entire series. And yes, they have one demoralizing loss the way it went in game four for them. But if you're the Preds, you feel like you could easily be up 3-1. If you're the Kings, you feel like you just put your best game on ice and lost, and know that you've had your doors blown off for most of the rest of the series. That's kind of why I feel it's a little different.
Well, and in your back of your head as well, if you're a player, you're going, this is the team that beat us 2 years ago and eliminated us in the first round. This is the team last year that beat us in the first round, eliminated us. And this is the team that's now up 3-1. Like, at the end of the day, at some point, that part has to set in and go, this team just has our number, yeah, no matter what we do.
And it's hard, like, it would be hard not for that to set in. And by the way, do you know the last time we know about some of the epic Calgary-Vancouver matchups in the playoffs, some of the epic Battle of Alberta playoff matchups, and there are numerous, even though it's been a while, or there was 30 years between the Flames and Oilers playing in the playoffs. It had been a minute since 2022. You know the last time the Kings and Oilers played in the playoffs?
Kings and Oilers or Canucks?
Sorry,
and Oilers?
Canucks and Oilers played in the playoffs.
Well,
I know the last
how you're prefacing and framing this up. I'm gonna say it's been a while, so I'm just gonna just toss a number out there. I have no idea, yeah. And you could have
hit me.
1990,
close. 1992. It's been 32 years.
I was either going the Oilers in 90 with their cup run or the Vancouver Canucks in 93. So I would have been off either way.
92. The Vancouver Canucks played the Edmonton Oilers in round two. And lost in the Smythe Division Finals in six games. It's the last time the Canucks, whew, and Oilers have played in a playoff series, and they've only played each other twice. They played each other in 86 and 92 and have not played a playoff round since.
Should the city of Calgary be cheering, if that's the scenario, be cheering for Vancouver?
Oh, 1,000% for two reasons.
Well, one, the conditional pick.
And two,
it's not Edmonton.
Yeah. I guess if
is that
still
a part of the Calgary citizenship
still
test
got
right
a,
there?
If you still got a soft spot for the Purple Gatorade line, or if you still got a soft spot for Elias Lindholm, then that could be a third as well.
And Nikita Zadorov.
If you still got a soft spot for Elias Lindholm. No, I'm just kidding. You know, Z's been pretty good for them in the playoffs as well. But yeah, I think that becomes pretty easy if you're a Flames fan. I don't know. This incarnation of the Canucks is so much less, is so much more difficult to despise, other than they're a number one rival of the Flames, compared to the last time the Canucks were in a really good phase. I don't know, just Quinn Hughes and Elias Pettersson and Thatcher Demko. I mean, JT Miller is one of those guys that if you played him in a playoff series, I think other fans would be like, okay, I'm done with this guy, in a good way. But I don't know, comparing this core Canucks group to Ryan Kessler and Max Lapierre,
Sedins,
and Kevin Bieksa.
Not that I'm going to lump the Sedins.
No,
into
the Sedins,
three.
They don't belong in that. You're putting the Sedins and the Burrows, Kessler,
No, I'm just
Bieksa.
Saying they were part of that core.
They were. I'm just saying that with the smarmy President's Trophy losing to the Boston Bruins Canucks.
Pat hates the Sedins and Luongo.
I love the Sedins. I think that they are two of the classiest humans to ever play the sport.
Agreed.
They just happen to be on a team with Ryan Kessler and Kevin Bieksa.
Your little head tilt there when you said that, I know we're in a radio medium and audio only, but it said everything.
And I've spoken to Bieksa on these airwaves about they were such an easy team to despise. And not just Calgarians. Everybody. Like, that was the number one team to hate in the NHL in the late 2000s, early 2010s. Kessler was doing his antics. And Bieksa with his antics, and then Burrows and Lapierre. You're just like, these guys, like, people loved Brad Marchand because of how easy the Canucks were to hate in that incarnation. My point is, this group of Canucks is so much easier to like than that group was.
Now, it doesn't mean you have to like them. You're just doing a compare contrast to the, as you mentioned, the early 2010s Vancouver Canucks. Agree.
Read you a few texts at 960-960. What else we got here? This says, what you guys are talking about with the Kings and Caps not belonging is exactly why the NHL shouldn't expand the playoffs. See that Ryan Pinder has gotten into our text line. This says, Pat, I totally disagree. I think Nashville's probably feeling a lot more deflated than LA. At least LA kept Edmonton to 1-0, where Nashville's kept Vancouver almost every single game to less than 15 shots, and they continue to lose, especially with the last 3 minutes to go of last game, and then they lose in overtime. So I think Nashville's feeling more deflated than LA is. That comes from Waldo in Cranston.
For me, that would be the reason. Fair. I would feel good if I'm the Nashville Predators, knowing that you've outplayed your opponent and just haven't got the result. So in theory, if you just stick to doing what you're doing, I know you've run out of runway here. Your margin of error is nil. But if you continually outplay your opponent, eventually at some point it's going to flip back. Now, again, if you can just get Saros to meet the goalie at the other end of the ice, whoever that happens to be on any given day in Vancouver's net, that's what you need.
Matt and Cochran says, I'd rather Gary find a way to disqualify both teams if they advanced to round two. This reads, shut up, Pat. Vancouver will always be easy to hate. I'll root for them for 5 more wins until the Flames get their pick, and then I hope they get destroyed. I'm not suggesting that you should cheer for Vancouver to go deep. I'm not even saying that you should necessarily cheer for them. Just my thought would be they're a little easier to cheer for in a head-to-head matchup.
Especially if it benefits the Calgary Flames.
And there's a benefit of the Flames. And finally, this says, guaranteed you would love those guys if they were on your team. I know I would have loved a Kessler on my team.
Pospisil is the greatest example of that currently.
I'm not suggesting that they, but without them being on your team, very easy to hate. Aaron Vickers on Twitter at AA Vickers. Cam and Shan, our producers this hour, thanks for all your input on the text line. And that'll wrap us up on the Sports Drive. Brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. Simplify your life with a security ecosystem. Go to calgarylockandsafe.com to request a security audit and get a tailored solution.